Gospel reading, we continue in Luke in the 12th chapter, beginning in the 13th verse. Someone in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But Jesus said to him, "Friend, who set me to be a judge or arbiter over you?" And he said to them, "Take care. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions." Then he told them a parable. The land of a rich man produced abundantly. And he thought to himself, what should I do? For I have no place to store my crops. Then he said, "I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life is being demanded of you. And the things you prepared, whose will they be?' So it is with those who store up treasures for themselves, but are not rich toward God. In our hearing, our speaking, our living,
may God's word and grace abound."
So the story is told of a preacher who got up and read those final lines of this passage. "You fool, God tells the man, this very night your very life will be demanded of you. The things you have prepared, whose will they be? So it will be for those who've stored up treasure for themselves." And then looking at the congregation, he said, "We will now accept the offering." There is this very human, very common habit of seeing what we want to see, interpreting things in ways that reinforce what we really want to believe. Psychologists and social workers and others have noted for decades the existence of thought distortions, or sometimes they're called cognitive distortions. It's a fancy term for what happens when we convince ourselves of certain perceptions and convictions that aren't really accurate. Often they are perceptions of what we want to believe, that we won the argument, or that ginormous bowl of ice cream is really just one serving. Or when I'm quite sure that talking on the phone counts as exercise. Most of us do this from one time or another, to some degree or another. Some distortions are quite serious. "I am the best deal maker ever, the least racist person, a stable genius." Or even worse, there are times when we hear the opposite. When someone is convinced they are the worst person ever, that no one could possibly love them. Another very common thought distortion is, "I am a self-made person." In the gospel reading, a man rather foolishly asked Jesus to arbitrate a family dispute. Please note, if Jesus ever appears to you in person, don't bring up money. This was not the answer this guy was looking for. To make matters worse, Jesus goes on to tell a pointed story featuring a self-focused man. Doesn't say that the farmer stole anything or cheated anybody, but he suffered from distorted thinking. He's got a bumper crop, he's building bigger and bigger barns, puts his feet up and thinks, got it all, can rest. Paul reminded me that just 2 weeks ago, we've always done our own yard work, and we finally got to the point where it was gotten way ahead of us. We thought, we're going to call somebody. And we finally did, and we got New Garden, came out 2 weeks ago and did a fabulous job in our yard, and we kind of put our feet up and looked out and thought, now we can rest. And then we heard the sound of rain and new roof leaks. The rich man is called a fool, not because he's successful as a farmer or because he saves for a rainy day. Those are good things. But because he has lived for himself alone and pats himself on the back for that. He believes he is in complete control of his life and has accomplished it all by himself. Martin Luther King Jr. preached about this passage back in Chicago in 1967. And he said, this man utters about 60 words. And you know in 60 words he said, I am my more than 15 times. This man was a fool because he said, I am my so much until he lost the capacity to say we and our. He failed to realize he couldn't do anything by himself. This man talked like he could build the barns by himself, like he could till the soil by himself. And he failed to realize that wealth is always a result of the commonwealth. We know the saying, too, that goes, you'll never see a U-Haul behind a hearse. There is a distorted way of thinking that seems rampant these days to me. It appears to have a very strong foothold in the halls of power. It is a grave distortion that says the ultra-rich deserve what they have while those in poverty deserve nothing. It is a distortion that says caring for others is not a moral or spiritual or theological or practical obligation. In fact, they view it as a weakness. The only goal in life is to amass more and more wealth and to do all you can to protect it with no regard to anyone else's needs. This distortion has at least contributed to, if not caused, the opioid crisis, as some medical professionals and big pharmaceutical companies have poured these drugs knowingly into the system to cause greater and greater addiction, all the while building wealth for a few. This distortion has led to much of the suffering we see of the migrants. Follow the money. It leads to for-profit detention centers. The lack of affordable health care, follow the money. Children in North Carolina who will be cut off from food assistance. Still no reasonable gun legislation in our country because the pockets of people in power in both parties are being lined by gun lobbies. The real problem with the farmer is he believes it all starts and ends with him. And his prosperity is all that matters. When those at the top of our society and our government system believe the same, we are in trouble. The man asking Jesus to be fair had a rude awakening that Jesus is less interested in fairness than in justice. And in just relationships. Walter Brueggemann said, when we are anxious and greedy, we cannot do justice. Those who embrace the message of Jesus are compelled to understand that in God's economy, everybody has enough. No one's left out. There is no need for stockpiling. Greed is overturned and overruled. Can make us all squirm a bit, and maybe that's okay. We all do a lot. You are honestly about the most generous people I have ever known. Generous not just with money, but time and energy and talents. So you don't need to go sell all your stock or cash in your retirement fund, unless you're planning to sign it over to the church, in which case, let's talk. Jesus was addressing the distorted thinking that any individual, any community, any society, any nation can fall prey to. The self-absorption, the illusion that we can be in control, that we live and die unto ourselves alone. that we're self-made people and everyone else has to fend for themselves. Jesus cares about how we deal with money. He cares even more about where our hearts are. He understood that love of things can impoverish the soul, and he also understood that using wealth in certain ways can bring great freedom and great blessing to many. God's desire for us is to have rich hearts and generous spirits. The pews we are sitting on come from wood that other people raised and lumbered. The roof over our heads will soon be repaired by an immigrant from El Salvador. Church members long gone worked incredibly hard and in creative ways to build this place. The ground this church stands on belonged to other people before us. And so it is with our lives. Few of us built our own homes, our own workplaces, or raise all the food we eat, or even raise our children on our own. It is humbling and important to remember how much others contribute to our lives as we contribute to theirs. There's a painting of this parable by an artist from Texas, James Janknet. And it's a painting that shows two sides. One is the man in his solitary home, and he's across an empty dining room table talking with the angel of death, surrounded by stuff. And next door is another picture of a dining room table that's full of food and a family that's gathered around and holding hands. I imagine an alternate ending to the parable. The man lives, but the barn roof leaks, and his neighbors come help fix it. Or the man falls ill and people show up with food. And somewhere down the road, he throws a big party to say thank you to everyone, taking out everything he has stockpiled. Perhaps the man who asked Jesus about dividing the inheritance went away and finally realized his greatest treasure was the brother he'd been feuding with. How do we resist the rising tide of me first, exalting the individual over the common good? We cultivate rich hearts. We fight for the poor and the policies that lift them up instead of criminalizing them. We tip generously. We follow the money when we see people being hurt and mistreated. We spend more time with family and friends. We do our part to put the storage industry out of business. We say thanks often. We vote for those who understand that care for others and care for the earth are moral imperatives. We don't put off what we love to do. We discover the joy of giving things away. We work on seeing the world as God sees it without distortion, beautiful and beloved. We must never, as Dr. King said, lose the capacity to say we and our.